It's my pleasure now to call upon our speaker, our brother Peter Robinson, to lead us in a consideration of the topic, Future World Events, explained by the prophet Daniel.
Thank you, Brother Roger, and good evening, everyone. We have some really exciting Bible prophecies to consider this evening, prophecies that will take us into the future and will give us insight into the return of the Lord Jesus Christ. Prophecies that really will, I believe, keep us watching with that oil within our lamps. These prophecies, actually, we have several in the chapter we just read. And some of these give dates, time periods. You'll recall we read about a 2300-year time period in this particular chapter. We're going to find that this chapter links itself very, very nicely with Daniel chapter 12. Where there are three more time periods, a 1260, a 1290, and a 1335. And we'll see how these all come together as we work our way through this magnificent subject. And actually, I didn't pick the subject. If I had the opportunity, I certainly would have. And what we're going to do is we're going to put our emphasis, of course, on that future aspect of it. But we're right in the middle of Daniel here, Daniel chapter 8. And just a little background, I think, is helpful. In Daniel chapter 2, the king Nebuchadnezzar, head of Babylon, saw a vision of a great image. And that image actually sets the stage for Daniel chapter 7 and Daniel chapter 8 as well. And this is what we have in these other two chapters. The image is revealed to King Nebuchadnezzar. He was the head of gold, his kingdom was. And after him would come a second kingdom, the Medo-Persian Empire, a third kingdom, the Grecian Empire, and finally the legs of this image of iron would be the Roman Empire, the eastern and the western part of that. And then into the future, there's going to be a stone cut out. Actually, it was cut out at the time of Christ's first coming. And it was cut out without hands. And that stone, of course, is in heaven. But it's going to come, and it's going to smite this image upon its feet, and the whole image is going to come crumbling down. And so it gives us an insight, actually, into the future here. Now, this same image, these kingdoms of men, were seen by Daniel in Daniel chapter 7. And he sees them quite differently, the same empires, but he sees them as God would see these empires, as ravenous beasts, as opposed to a great and mighty image that was made of gold and silver and brass and iron. The Babylonian Empire is seen as a lion, a ravenous lion, and with eagle's wings and that of probably the Assyrian and the Babylonian part of it. The Medo-Persian has this of a bear, and it tears out from the lion of the Babylonian part the three ribs. One of those is thought to be Daniel. The third kingdom is that of the Grecian kingdom, and you have here, of course, the wings of this leopard and the speed at which this empire conquered the known world at that time. And finally, this ravenous beast here that has no likeness in the beasts of mankind, thank goodness. A ten-horned beast, a ferocious beast, descriptive of that of the Roman Empire. And as seen here, we have the picture here of Jesus coming back, and these kingdoms, actually, he takes them all over and sets up a kingdom upon the earth in which the King Nebuchadnezzar described we have in the days of these kings. He saw the God of heaven would set up a kingdom which should never be destroyed. It would break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it would stand forever. Now, in the chapter we read this evening, we find that we have these empires, but the time period of Daniel has transpired, and he's now part of the Medo-Persian Empire. And he sees these kingdoms as that of farm animals, as opposed to ravenous beasts. And we have further insights into these kingdoms here, of that of a ram, which we read about, and a he-goat. And finally, we have a little horn that comes out of this he-goat that we will identify as we proceed. Now, what's very nice with chapter 8 is that we have the interpretation. So we know we're right as far as the beginning part of this these kingdoms. And we read in Daniel chapter 8, we read in verses 3 and 4, "Then lifted up my eyes and saw, and behold, there stood before the river a ram, which had two horns." These would be the Medo-Persian part. It was two parts of the empire here. "And the two horns were high, but the one was higher than the other." And this would be the Persian one that came up last. And it goes on, it says, "I saw the ram pushing westward and northward and southward, so that no beast might stand before him. Neither was there any that could deliver out of his hand. But he did according to his will, and he became great." And as we look at this empire in history, that's exactly what happened. But in verse 20 that we read, we have the interpretation. So we're not left to have to interpret ourselves. And that's very helpful. It tells us that the ram which thou sawest in verse 20, having two horns, are the kings of Medo and Persia. And so we have the identification of what was seen here by Daniel. Now, we also have the same thing with that of the next kingdom. It was the Grecian Empire. It represented, of course, the thighs and the image back in chapter 2. But here it's identified as well. Verse 5, "And I was considering, behold, an he-goat came from the west, and on the face of the whole earth, and touched not the ground. And the goat had a notable horn between his eyes." And if we go a little later in the chapter, in verses 21 and 22, it's identified. And the rough goat is the king of Grecia. And the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king. And history identifies this so clearly. It was Alexander the Great, that king. And then in verse 22 it says, "Now that being broken, whereas the four stood up for it, four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power." Alexander, we know, died in Babylon, and actually his four generals took over that kingdom. He was the great horn, it was broken. So, what we have here is, we just very quickly, we got the Persian Empire, it was overcome by Alexander the Great, and verse 7 continues, it says, "And I saw him," that would be the he-goat, "come close unto the ram," that would be the Medo-Persian Empire, "and he was moved with choler," he moved against him with great ferocity, "against him, and smote the ram, and brake his two horns, and there was no power in the ram to stand before him. But he cast him down to the ground and stamped upon him, and there was none that could deliver the ram out of his hand." This was the work and power of Alexander the Great. And I think this picture has a good description of it, as it came with great ferocity and relentlessly completely overwhelmed the Persian Empire. Verse 8. So we're just continuing on here in Daniel chapter 8. It gets even more interesting. We start to get into the future part of it here. "Therefore the he-goat waxed very great, and when he was strong," this is the Grecian Empire we're talking about, "the great horn was broken." And that happened on June 13, 323 BC, when Alexander the Great, of course, in Babylon died. And it says, "And it, for it came up four notable ones." These would be the four generals that took over the Grecian Empire: Cassander, Lysimachus, Ptolemy, and Seleucus, "toward the four winds of heaven." So they divided up his empire. Verse 9, "And out of one of them came forth a little horn." Now, this we can see from history, because we had the image, and after the Grecian Empire, we could easily identify that it was the Roman Empire that would follow. And so it is. But it says it was a little horn. And it was little at first, because, and we have descriptive here, the horn being the power, and the great horn of the goat, of course, was Alexander the Great. This is a little horn, because the power at first in Rome was in the Senate and in the Assembly. So it was little, but it's going to be waxed great. "Which waxed exceeding great," and then it identifies this, "toward the south, toward the east, and toward the pleasant land." And the pleasant land here is easy to identify as Israel. But it's very important to be able to identify waxing toward the south and the east. And we'll see that, because it not only identifies the little horn, but it sets up the stage for a magnificent prophecy here that will come out of it. Now, history and geography also identify the Little Horn as Rome. Rome began slowly to move first south and then east. Rome moved south after 280 BC, after defeating the tough Latin people to the north. This move south ended with the Punic Wars against Carthage. To the east was gradual, beginning after the death of Seleucus in 280 BC. And we're stressing that 280 BC. We'll see why in a minute, why we stress that date, and we will support it. One of the ways that we do support it is from the Encyclopedia Britannica here, and this is a quote. It says, when after the death of Seleucus I in 280 BC, the Seleucid grip on Asia Minor slackened. And what happened here is that Rome gradually moved into that, didn't have to do it by military action for the mostly. It was able to just move in and gradually supplant that of the Grecian part of this empire. And finally, in 188 BC, under the Treaty of Apennia, the greater part of the Seleucid Asia Minor was assigned to Rome. In other words, they just transferred their kingdom over to Rome. It had grown quite large and powerful at that time. So, the Little Horn waxed great, its Roman Empire. Verse 10, and it waxed great even to the host of heaven, which is just there, that's the faithful. And it cast down some of the hosts and of the stars to the ground. And we see this in the first century, and some of those stars, like James and the disciples and that, were cast down to the ground. And he stamped upon them. Verse 11, yea, he magnified himself even to the prince of the hosts. And we would suggest that would be Jesus here in this context. By him the daily sacrifice was taken away. That happened in AD 70 when he destroyed the temple and all that area in Jerusalem. This would be the Roman Empire took over that the land of Israel ruled it with an iron hand there afterwards and scattered the Jews out of it. It goes on that says the daily sacrifice was taken away. Now this is going to play quite a part and the prophecies that we will look at here that take us into the future. And of his sanctuary, it was cast down, and we suggest that was happened in AD 70. Verse 13. Then I heard one saint speaking unto another saint, said unto that certain saint which spake, how long shall be the vision concerning the daily sacrifice? Well, that's key. It's an interesting question here. And the transgression. Now, we would suggest the transgression here of desolation. This is the Jewish translation that caused it in the crucifixion of Christ. It was caused by Israel. Israel was scattered because of it. It goes on, to give both the sanctuary, suggest in AD 70, and the host, this would be the Jews, to be trodden underfoot. And then we have a very interesting time period. And he said unto me, unto 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. Now, what we're going to find in Bible prophecy is the principle of a day for a year. And we're going to be able to, we'll see how this works out. And if we have time, I will support that with scripture. But it's very, very common in Bible prophecy of this day for a year principle. So, let's take a look at the context here. It's very important because we've got a time period here. And we're going to say starts at a certain time and ends at a certain time, and that time's going to take us actually into the future, I believe. So the context is actually, in this part here, verse 9. It's identifying Rome, the cause to the daily sacrifice being removed. So it's the one that did this. Rome, the Little Horn, verse 9, began to move south in B.C. 280. And I took this from a modern-day historian, Richard Hooker. I have this quote. And he said, in 295 B.C., Rome began a war with the tough Latin people. And it goes on in this quote, and it says, the result of this war in 280 B.C., so we've got confirmation of that date there, was total Rome control over all of central Italy. And it goes on, Rome then turned its eyes south. So that we're having the fulfillment of this little horn, it goes south and then east. Now, the east part, as we've already mentioned, and we quoted this already from the Encyclopedia Britannica, this is when Seleucus I dies, and gradually the Roman Empire supplanted that of the Grecian horn in this particular case, the Seleucid horn that had control over that area. And we see this in the Encyclopedia Britannica, Volume 2, page 727, the 68 edition. Now, the interesting question is, how long shall be the vision concerning the sanctuary? And we've got here, using the day for a year principle, 2,300 years. So we would simply take 2,300 and remember the 280 date, which would be B.C. We would subtract that from the 2,300, and then B.C. 1 and A.D. 1 are the same. So we subtract another 1 from that. And that brings us down to 2019 A.D., when the sanctuary is cleansed. It is suggested this happens when the Dome of the Rock is destroyed at Armageddon. And this would be the earthquake that's described in Zechariah chapter 14, when Christ stands upon the Mount of Olives, it splits. And we have the destruction of the Russian Confederacy that has come down, and we know that as Armageddon. Now, note this vision concerns the daily sacrifice. This is, ties this whole thing together. And that plays quite a very interesting part, not only in chapter 8, but it also in chapter 12. And this is how we're going to link the two chapters together here. In chapter 12 and verse 11, we have another time period. Actually, we have two time periods here. It says, from the time that the daily sacrifice, so you can see the link here of the daily sacrifice from chapter 8 and chapter 12. From the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away, and we know when that was taken away by Nebuchadnezzar, he came in and destroyed Jerusalem, and we would suggest about 598 that this daily sacrifice was taken away, and the abomination, we've suggested that would be the Dome of the Rock, a false religious system set up in Jerusalem that make us desolate. And that happened actually in 691 A.D., shall be 1,290 days. So we have a time period here. We have the 598 date when it was taken away, and that's B.C., so we take the 1290 from that. That brings us over to A.D. 692. We track the 1 here, and we get 691 A.D. And that actually is the date that the Dome of the Rock actually was set up and inaugurated. But the prophecy doesn't stop there, and this is what makes this so interesting. It says, blessed is he that waiteth and cometh to the 1,335 days. Again, using the day for a year principle. He that waiteth is when Ezekiel's temple has been set up, and the daily sacrifice begins. Remember, it's when it's taken away, when will it begin? And that's the key question. Well, it gives us this time period. This shall be 1,335 days after the Dome of the Rock, which is the abomination of desolation, was built. There's several abominations of desolation, but this is the one here that obviously fits into one we see today. It brings it down to our own time, and we know all about this this Islamic Muslim religion. So, we take the 691 and the 1335, and that gives us 2026 A.D. And those like Daniel will be blessed to see the daily sacrifice reinstituted at that time. So we got Ezekiel's temple would have been built, and the daily sacrifice would be reinstituted. So when is the sanctuary cleansed from the abomination that maketh desolate? Well, that's an interesting question. When would it be cleansed? Well, that would happen at Armageddon, of course. So that we would suggest it's cleansed at around 2019 A.D. And the reason we would suggest that is that in Solomon's temple, when it was erected, that it took 7 years. So we would suggest a similar time period when Ezekiel's temple will be built. That brings us down to 2019. Now we're going to go back to Daniel chapter 8. We're going to come back to, of course, Daniel chapter 12, and we'll develop this even further. So the sanctuary is cleansed in 2019 A.D. with the earthquake in Zechariah 14 at Armageddon. That would be the conclusion we would put on it. Now, it's very helpful. There's a number of Bible prophecies here, as you can see, all the way down here. But just to have an overall picture of the events that we believe are coming, as prophesied in the Bible, the future Bible prophecies here. And one of those is, of course, the return of Christ. We believe he's outlined in the Bible, in fact, there are seven references in the New Testament, this is just one of those, that tell us that Jesus is going to return as a thief. And what's being pictured here is that a thief comes when people are not looking for him. But those who are watching, and the Bible prophecies help us to keep watching, will be watching for him, and when he comes in that, we'll have the opportunity actually to go forth and meet him. So that that call will go forth, and that would be certainly the first event that we would suggest on the timetable here. With that will come the resurrection and judgment. Those that are responsible, they will hear the call, they will go forth, and there will be a resurrection of those that, of course, have died, and those that are living in that would hear the call and go forth. And when we get to Daniel chapter 12 and we go through this, we'll see one of the key references of that. We then have, of course, a marriage that will take place between Christ and his saints, as outlined in Revelation chapter 19. Now, all these events happen before, actually, Armageddon. And Armageddon is when the cleansing of the sanctuary takes place. That's Zechariah 14, when Christ stands upon the Mount of Olives and it splits. And it's thought, and we will support this a little bit later, this takes a period of about 10 years from the thief till when Armageddon takes place, and then Christ sets himself up, because he's the one that's going to destroy this confederacy that comes against Israel. And at that time, of course, the sanctuary will be cleansed from the abomination. The earthquake will probably do it. And that whole Colossus, the Dome of the Rock and all that that's built there, will be completely destroyed by the earthquake. And Jesus then is going to set himself up over not only Israel, at first it will be over Israel, and then over the whole world. And the temple is going to be built in this period of time, and this is described in Ezekiel 40 to 42, chapters 40 through 42. The gospel is going to be preached to the whole world, those that have come through the desolations at Armageddon, and a tremendous opportunity for the world to accept Christ. Unfortunately, Jesus is going to be seen as the Antichrist here, and the result, of course, will be Christ is not the Antichrist, and he will go forth and destroy those that see him as the Antichrist. And the deception will take place because of this little horn that we have just met in Daniel chapter 8. It will deceive, and it also will be deceived. And it will be, of course, controlling Babylon the Great. This is not just Babylon, it's Babylon the Great, and that Colossus will be destroyed, and finally the millennial age will be set up. Now, it's very helpful to have that picture as we move forward here. In Daniel chapter 8, we saw that in verses 15 to 22, the vision was interpreted. We have the ram was interpreted, and the he-goat was interpreted. And then it goes on in verse 23, and it says, "And in the latter time," there's a break here in time, "of their kingdom," and the context here is verse 9, equals the Roman little horn, "when the transgressors are come to the full," this would be the time of Rome's decline, "a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up." So we have this king that's going to stand up, and he's going to take over. The Roman Empire is disintegrating at this time, and there's another little horn, well, it's this little horn here, actually, it's going to be taken over by this king of fierce countenance. It becomes, I believe, this little horn, the papacy at this stage, but not by his own power. In other words, he's going to have political power. First going to be given this power by Phocas, we will look at that, and then later by Charlemagne. As it goes on, it says, "And he shall destroy wonderfully, and shall prosper and practice, and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people." And when we look at what happened through the Dark Ages, and that, we see that's exactly what happened. that those that did not go along with this little foreign power, and that it actually had the power to destroy them. And it says it shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. And the holy people would, of course, be that of the saints, those that would make up the saints that were God's people, Daniel's people. So we have this actually contrasted with what it says in Daniel chapter 12 and verse 1, where it says, thy people, and this particular case will be the Jewish people. Just want you to hold that in your mind as we will get to Daniel chapter 12 and verse 1 in a minute. The little horn here is the little horn actually of chapter 7. Now we hadn't had a chance to read chapter 7, but we have a little horn here, and it's described even more so, and the two horns actually become the same. Daniel 7 gives us insight into Daniel chapter 8. Just looking at Daniel 7 for a moment here at verse 8, it says, I considered the horns. Now this is the Roman, out of the Roman beast, and there were 10 horns in that beast. And that's described a little earlier here in Daniel chapter 7. And it says, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. So this little horn actually takes over three of those 10 horns. So it's given us an idea to be able to place the interpretation on it. It says, And I behold, in the horn were eyes, eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. And I like this illustration here that describes it quite aptly. But we can see from history that this little horn that came out of the Roman Empire in that and took over three of the horns is identified. And the three horns here are identified as the Exarch of Ravenna, the Kingdom of the Lombards, and the state of Rome itself. And the little horn didn't do this by its own power. It was actually given by Pippin. And Pippin, of course, was the father of Charlemagne and of the Holy Roman Empire. So we have this description from history. It fits exactly what we see here in Daniel chapter 7. And therefore, we can identify this quite easily. So this is seen, actually, in the triple crown of the papacy. And that's just an illustration of that. Now, the Holy See, this is how it sees. It has the eyes of a man. And these eyes go throughout the whole earth. And it's actually in its system that it has set up with the different churches that are established all through the earth. And it gets feedback through its priests and that of exactly what's happening in those particular areas. This is its eyes. The mouth would be the papal bulletins. Some claiming to be that it's infallible, others changing our calendar. In fact, the calendar that we have has been set up by this system. Verse 25 of chapter 7. And he, this is the little horn, shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think the same times and laws. And they shall be given unto his hand until a time, times, and the dividing of time. So here's another time period. And actually we can show fairly easily a time in the prophetic word is 360 days, and using the day for a year principle. So it'll be 360 years. So we have a time, which would be 360, times, that would be at least two times, we would say then 360 times two would be 720, and a dividing of time, which would be a half of a 360, would be 180. And if you added all that up, it would add up to 1260 years. Now we will see that picked up in chapter 12 in a few minutes. So when did the little horn lose its power to wear out the saints? Well, when did it get its power? And the political power was given this little horn, we would say for 1260 years, time, and the dividing of times. This began with the decree of Phocas in AD 606 and removed 1260 years later. And this, we'll find out, is verified in Daniel chapter 12. Now, who was Phocas? Well, Phocas was over the Eastern Roman Empire, And what he did, there was kind of, you have the Eastern Orthodox Church, and you have the Western Church in Rome. And what the Focus did, who was over the eastern part from Constantinople, he in turn said, oh, we're going to recognize the Pope in Rome as the head bishop. And so that's what he did. And that from that point on, the bishop, the head bishop over all the church, and that was considered to be that of the Pope and the papacy. Now, that would consider, would take place, it says we have a time period, it would be given to him, this power, for 1,260 years. Time, times, and a dividing of time. And that actually takes us to about 1866, 1870. And that's when, of course, Napoleon and finally Garibaldi came in, and the Pope completely lost his power. In fact, he even lost his seat and was not allowed to... It was taken actually from Rome captive. So he had that power, and now he lost it, but we will see he gets it back. Not the political part of it, but certainly his seat back in Rome. Now, with that, let's go to chapter 12, because that really gives us some insight, and it, I think we'll all come together here. It says, and at that time, and I would suggest here this is Armageddon. We have time, we've got to pick up chapter 11, and I think we could show that. Because we have the king of the north established actually in Jerusalem at the last end of the last verses in chapter 11. It says, at that time shall Michael stand up. Now the word Michael means one like God. Now we would suggest here, we would interpret that, that that's not Michael the archangel, but it is a symbol of Jesus, because what it says here, he will stand up, and it identifies him, the great prince which standeth for the children of thy people. Jesus is about to stand up. He stands up at Armageddon. He will be, he's a prince, and he will become, of course, the king, a king over all the earth. So, he's going to stand up for the children of thy people. And this is not the holy people, this is the Jews. And actually that word, if you look up in Strong's in that, it can be translated nation as well. So, and there shall be a time of trouble. So these are the events that I believe surrounding Armageddon, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. And the context, of course, is Armageddon, and the focus, of course, is thy people, which would be the nation of Israel. And from Zechariah, we can see that two-thirds of the nation of Israel are going to be destroyed at that time. So, this is the time of trouble that has no equal as far as Israel is concerned. And they've been through, as we know, terrible times of trouble. It says, and at that time, thy people, this would be the Jewish people, shall be delivered. They're going to be delivered by Christ and the saints at Armageddon. Everyone that shall be found written in the book. Well, that would be the one-third that comes through the destruction that is upon Israel at that time. So, after Jesus, the great prince, returns as a thief and the resurrection and judgment take place, the great prince will stand up to confront the king of the north, Daniel 11, verses 40 through 45, during the time of unprecedented trouble on Israel. And this we find in Zechariah 13, verse 8 to support that. Thy people, the Hebrew word is them, it's also translated nations, would equal the Jews as compared to the holy people. And the holy people are described to us actually in chapter 8. This would be the saints in Daniel 8 and 24. And we will see actually in verse 7 of chapter 12, they're also described as the holy people. Now a question comes up here. Does Michael stand up before the resurrection? Remember the time period that we put up, the sequence and that? It would seem to be out of order here because you got Armageddon, and then you have in verse 2, as you see in your Bible, the resurrection and the judgment. It says, and many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. So if we took it in chronological order, you got Armageddon up here in verse 1, and then you've got the resurrection and judgment, which would certainly seem to be out of order. But look at the context here. It says, and they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament. So we're not talking of thy people, the Jewish people here. The context is moved, and we'll see this in the last part of Daniel chapter 8, to the holy people and to those that we would say are responsible at the judgment, and those that would wake, some to everlasting life and some to shame and everlasting contempt. So, we have actually here a picture of the judgment. And you have the three classes. Many, not all, would awake. Some would remain in the grave. And then the two classes here. Now, is the context chronological? And the reason I said that, because you got the Armageddon up here. And actually, we would say that Christ comes as a thief. You got the resurrection and judgment here. You got Armageddon down here. How do we go about that? Well, the answer is no. The context moves in verse 2 from the Jews, thy people, to those that be wise, verse 3. Turn many to righteousness, the holy people as described in verse 7. And so our context has turned. And this is what makes this so interesting, the last part of this prophecy, to us and helps to keep us awake. Verse 4. But thou, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. And if that doesn't describe our world today, I don't know what does. But no wonder Daniel fainted when he saw this picture in Daniel chapter 8 and verse 27, where it says, and I, Daniel, fainted and was sick many certain days. I was astonished at the vision, but none understood it. And we can well imagine if he saw a vision of people running to and fro and the technology that exists today. It would be not discerning, he would be amazed and confounded. Now, verse 7 of Daniel 12. And I heard the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand unto heaven, and swear by him that liveth forever and ever, that it shall be for a time, times, and a half. So we've already met this. This is in chapter 7, time, times, and a half. And when he, I would suggest here, the papal power, shall have accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people. So after this time, times, and a half, beginning, of course, back at focus, and then having power throughout the dark ages and that, to scatter, but the Reformation changed all that, and he gradually lost his power by Napoleon and finally by Garibaldi. And no longer has the power actually to physically persecute people. Revelation 12, verse 14, it says, and to the woman, and a woman in the Bible is descriptive of the church, were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness. That would be where the word was actually lacking, devoid of water, into her place where she is nourished for a time, times and a half. So here we have this time, times and a half. We don't have time really to put together the revelation here, but it actually goes a step beyond Daniel and gives us further insight into this system that would set itself up for this period of time and persecute. Just looking one router reference here, because we can tie this all into 1260 quite easily, with Daniel, Revelation chapter 11, verse 3, where it says, and I will give power unto my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days, which of course is our 1,260. So that's Daniel chapter 12 and verse 7. Who are the holy people? Well, the holy people are like Daniel, who have separated themselves, opposing the mother harlot, and turning many to righteousness here, as we see in verse 3. And the context is the 1260-year period detailed in Revelation 12, verse 14, beginning with the decree of focus that confirmed the Pope as head of all churches. This wolf in sheep's clothing used this decree to persecute all who resisted. And we see that. Now, I actually had the opportunity to take this picture when I was in Rome, and it is actually a column that's set up as a monument for that focus. It's set up in Rome because the Pope was so grateful at that time that he was made the universal bishop, that he set up this calm that we still have in Rome today of the Emperor Phocas. Even though he's an Eastern emperor in that, he has a calm in Rome because of what he did for the Pope. Verse 8. And I heard, but I understood not. Then said I, O my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? In other words, what follows the 1260 years ending in 1866 to 1870? And this is what comes interesting. And he said, Go thy way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed to the time of the end. I believe very much we live in that time of the end. Many shall be purified and made white and tried. But the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. So who are the wise? Well, the wise are the holy people, as described in Daniel chapter 12 and verse 3, that turn many to righteousness, and they shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, as stars forever and ever. And that would be, of course, throughout the millennial age that they will have part. And that brings us to verse 11, which we looked at briefly, and we'll cover this in a little bit more detail. It says, From the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away, that was, we saw by Nebuchadnezzar, and the abomination that maketh desolate set up, that's when the Dome of the Rock was set up, there shall be 1,290 days. And we worked out that time period there. Verse 12, Blessed is he that waiteth and cometh to the 1,305 days. And we worked that out. And he that waiteth is when Ezekiel's temple has been set up, replacing the abomination that maketh desolate. And this will be 1,335 day years after the Dome of the Rock was built. So, we took that, 691, when it was set up, the 1,335, and that brought us to 2026. And those like Daniel will be blessed to see the daily sacrifice reinstituted. Daniel being raised, and hopefully will be alive and blessed with places in God's kingdom at that time, and with Daniel, and see this. So when is the sanctuary cleansed from the abomination that maketh desolate? Well, the sanctuary is cleansed at Armageddon, in the earthquake, in Zechariah 14. However, Jesus is returned as a thief 10 years before that time. Now, how do we come up with that? Well, Solomon's temple was 7 years in building, so we take the 2026, and that brings us down to 2019, and we take 10 years off of that, and we get 2009, that's next year. So, coming back to our timeline here, we found, actually can work out, the whole thing from 1 to 10 is thought to be a jubilee period. And points 5 to 9 from Micah 7:15 is thought to be 40 years. And we just do a subtraction from the 50 years, and that gives us the 10-year time period there. And in Micah 7:15 we read, According to the days of thy coming out of the land of Egypt, which we suggest is 40 years, Why show unto him, this would be Babylon, the great marvelous things. And those are detailed in Psalm 48 and verse 4. The nations shall see and be confounded at all their, that would be Israel's might at this time, because Christ is in their midst. They shall lay their hand upon their mouth, their ears shall be deaf, unfortunately. They will see Jesus as the Antichrist. Now, we must be careful in trying to predict the time of Jesus' return, because Jesus tells us very clearly, and it's all but prophecy, no man knoweth the day nor the hour. But at the same time, in Acts 1 and verse 7 it says, He said unto them, It is not for you to know the times and seasons. But if you take the context of Acts chapter 1 and verse 7, we find that he's speaking to the disciples of that time. Because a little later, in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 1, we read, But of the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I write unto you. So the Thessalonians had an idea as to the times and seasons of Christ's return. And I believe the same we do too. In fact, we have a much better picture because we're a lot closer to these events when they will take place. At the same time, you have that overall that no man knoweth the day nor the hour. So we have to be very, very careful. But that doesn't mean that we don't try to put an interpretation on it. That helps to keep us watching. But we are not dogmatic, of course, on something like this. Finally, in verse 13, Daniel was told, "But go thou thy way till the end be, and thou shalt rest and stand in thy lot at the end of the days." That's when Daniel would be raised at the resurrection, and of course, he would be found righteous, for he had turned many to righteousness. But the key question is, will we stand at the end of those days? And the answer is, if we dare to be a Daniel, dare to stand alone, dare to have a cause, dare to make it known. Thank you.